Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
De Gea falla, el Nesiri puede partir la portería, el Nesiri, gol, 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 gol,
well, you heard it there, the drama at the Stadio Ramon Sanchez Pizjuan in Seville. I'm Sam Leverage, and I am very fortunate to be joined to start off our podcast by Rafa Garrido, live from Seville, and I think everybody listening wishes they were in Seville on Thursday night. Rafa, what's it like in Seville? I mean, huge win, 3-0 against Manchester United to reach the Europa League semi-finals. I mean, can you believe it?
Yeah, thank you for having me, Sam. It's going to sound weird, but yeah, I think myself and everyone in Sevilla can believe it. Maybe if you ask us before last Thursday, we wouldn't believe it. But at the minute Harry Maguire gave that gift to Sevilla at Old Trafford, I think, I wouldn't say everyone, but most of Sevilla fans were at least certain that they could pull it off, really pull it off. And it's going to be a party from now until probably at least Sunday, because, you know, today's Thursday. You know how Thursdays are in Sevilla. Then La Feria starts at Saturday. So every Sevilla fan is going to be really, pretty, pretty happy.
And Joaquin is retired. So another reason for Sevilla fans to celebrate.
Absolutely.
I mean, it's been a fantastic week for them. But I mean, you say that people thought that Sevilla could do it. But who saw this coming? I mean, 23 years since Sevilla had a worse season than this, and they've inflicted the joint heaviest defeat Manchester United have ever had in the European Cup, in the Euro Cup or the UEFA Cup or whatever it's been called at different times. I mean, it's a huge achievement, but also how much of that is down to José Luis Mendilibar? I mean, this is only his fourth game as a coach in European competition. He's obviously not been at Sevilla very long, but he seems to have had a real impact on Sevilla.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think he does not get the credit he actually has. I think it's basically because he hasn't changed really like drastically. So it has an impact like the average fan or the average journalist, but that's actually the hard thing to do when you enter into an emergency situation like this, like to reconnect the players to the idea and to the mission and to the stance, like today. I think that takes a lot of intelligence, a lot of a very good sense of managing and experience, despite not having like managed a dressing room like that maybe before. But I think he needs to get credit a lot more. And not only like tactically, but like more psychologically, if you want.
Yeah, the mental factor. I think most La Liga fans would know Mendilibar a lot better from his days as coach at Eibar or Sasuna, teams like that. And so to come into this Sevilla squad where there's some fairly big names in that squad is a different challenge for him.
Yeah, and knowing that it's going to probably be like a rented seat, because the question is like who's going to come over in the summer. Maybe he can he can earn some more time there, but that's the question.
Yeah, and I mean, Pepe Castro, the president of Sevilla, just earlier on Thursday was saying that he was wishing he'd sacked Julen Lopetegui last summer. I don't think anybody would have considered Mendilibar for that job a year ago, but now with Sevilla, where they are, Mendilibar's managed to recover them. And also, I mean, some of the highlights of this Sevilla team tonight, I mean, I think defensively, they were superb. Just as we were chatting before, you highlighted that. I mean, just how good was the Sevilla defense?
Yeah, I think Sevilla's defensive improvement has a lot to do with Loic Badé's signing. That's like the first point Monchi gets this season, maybe. But also for Nemanja Gudel to like finally get set in that role. That he played today in his natural role for like 25 minutes until Marcao got injured. But those two are like the main reason for Sevilla's defensive improvement. I think they gel very well together. And, you know, today, along with Ocampos, I think those two were the best players. And they led Sevilla to the 3-0 victory.
Exactly that. And I mean, another man who really performed well is Youssef En-Nesyri. But just before we got into him, I just remembered a tweet that I saw actually from Panos Kostopoulos, who's here in Madrid and covers Spanish football. And he was reminding people that Loic Badé was actually one of the signings that Nottingham Forest made in the Premier League at the start of the season. I hadn't put those two together. Yeah. For me, they were almost two different people. But I mean, to see how he's getting on at Sevilla is incredible. So let's go back to En-Nesyri. Two goals in this game. What is it with Youssef En-Nesyri? I mean, every time I watch him, he's either incredible or terrible. Tonight, in this game against Manchester United, he was incredible. But where did this come from?
I think no one knows it. I don't think Julen Lopetegui knows it. I don't think Mendilibar knows it. I don't think Monchi knows it. I don't think anyone knows it. One thing is sure, and one thing that Youssef En-Nesyri is very constant is in giving his all. And if there's a reason he has played with all three managers this season, with Sampaoli, with Mendilibar, and with Lopetegui. And he just got that thing most forwards don't have, that is scoring goals in important matches, not only with Sevilla, but he did it with Leganés early on his career, and he did it during the World Cup with Morocco, which is even crazier maybe than tonight's performance.
Yeah, I really like En-Nesyri, but I've always kind of questioned, has he got that ability to kick on? I mean, I feel like for a club like Leganés, he was always too good. But for a club like Sevilla that wants to be pushing for the Champions League and so on, he's not that level. But performances like this one is where he shows, look, he has the potential. It's just the consistency. But, I mean, he's going to have another big chance now to show what he's capable of. A semi-final against Juventus, of all teams. I mean, there could have been much easier draws in the Europa League semi-finals. I mean, obviously, the other semi-final is going to be Leverkusen, the German side, that are going to be involved there. So, I mean, I feel like Juventus is a trickier side. What's your prediction? I mean, this is Sevilla in the Europa League. But what do you think is going to happen in this semi-final? Can Sevilla reach that final? Are Juve just too good? I mean, two teams have underperformed this season. What is your forecast for that semi-final?
It's going to be hard. I think Sevilla can reach the finals. There's just two games. There's three games just to leave the seventh Europa League. So I think they are very motivated to do so. They see themselves capable. It's going to be hard. But if I were a Sevilla fan or even Sevilla itself, I would rather face Juventus than Sporting Lisbon. Just by the fact that Juventus now have to deal with the label of being the favorite, and that's going to be an advantage for Sevilla. And that Sevilla's relationship with the Europa League is utterly similar to Real Madrid in the Champions League. So that same magic, that same path Real Madrid had last season, maybe Sevilla can pull that off too. So I don't see a 50-50 match, but maybe like a 60-40 for Juventus, and Sevilla just needs, what, 5%, 10% maybe?
Yeah, I think Sevilla would take that. I mean, we can't forget, Sevilla are only 8 points clear of the relegation zone. There is the tiniest chance that they could be playing Champions League in Segunda next season if they win Europa League and go down. And after that first leg, I remember Sevilla fans complaining about Mendilibar's team selection, saying, no, he's trying to throw the competition, prioritise on the league. I mean, that didn't work out if that was Mendilibar's plan.
The
rollercoaster ride of Sevilla this season.
I think they can like now prioritize those two semifinal matches just due to the fact that they are 8 points clear. And I don't think, you know, a lot of things need to happen for Sevilla to go back into that relegation zone. And even the performances by Espanyol and Valencia, it's hard. It's hard.
Sevilla are bad, but there are enough teams worse than them that they can focus on.
Yeah, exactly.
That is a great conclusion, Rafa. Well, thank you very much for joining us, Rafa. We can wrap it up there and now head on to the other Spanish team in action. A little bit less exciting, I guess, but we're now going to speak to Jorge López Torrecilla. But first, let's hear a little bit of the action from Stamford Bridge. And now I'm joined by Jorge López Torrecilla, famously on Sky Sports, of course, leading the build-up to this week's Champions League action, where we had Real Madrid taking on Chelsea. This was pretty much a foregone conclusion after the 2-0 win at the Bernabeu in the first leg. But Jorge, a 2-0 win, two goals from Rodrigo, got the job done for Real Madrid. And in particular, I think there's one man who stood out to you, and we were just discussing before we started recording, and that's Thibaut Courtois.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, thank you for having me, Sam. It's such a pleasure to see you again. And yeah, I mean, the main man for Real Madrid was, in my opinion, Thibaut Courtois, because he's the lead man when it comes to big matches. It always starts with Thibaut Courtois. He made a huge save against Cucurella at the end of the first half. That goal could have been a huge factor in the round if Cucurella was able to score it. But Thibaut Courtois, once again, was the main man when Real Madrid needed him the most. And yeah, it was like a team effort at the end, but the man who started it all was Thibaut Courtois.
Yeah, I mean, just looking now at the expected goals on target, that's the expected goals when you take into account where the shot is, when it reaches the goal line, or the goalkeeper, so to speak, and everything. It came in at 0.64, so 64% chance of scoring given everything. So a fantastic save from Courtois, but we also have to look at the other end of the pitch. Of course, there was a certain man who loves scoring goals in the Champions League who got two. And I mean, both of these were quite easy goals, tap-ins, so to speak. But I mean, what is it about Rodrigo in the Champions League? He just seems to come alive.
Yes, I mean, and what is about Rodrigo in the Champions League against Premier League clubs? Like, it's something really outstanding. He always comes up clutch when the team needs him. And yeah, like, this is a huge part of the Real Madrid success in Europe in these past few years, is the appearances of Rodrigo. The way he always shows up, the way he always proves to be at the end of the goal scoring that the team needs. And yeah, he showed it against at Stamford Bridge. And he always comes up when Real Madrid needs him in the Champions League.
But he wasn't the MVP, according to UEFA.
No.
Maybe only UEFA, but that was Fede Valverde. I mean, Jorge, what did you make of that? I mean, Fede Valverde had a really good game. He got an assist. He didn't score the two goals. Right decision? Or, I mean, was Fede Valverde good? Was he MVP?
Yeah, I mean, yeah. He just is returning to his peak in this month of April. I was doing some research, and actually he averaged around 60% of successful actions per game in the month of March, and in April, in these five games, I believe they are, he has increased that percentage by 10%. He's now around 71 successful actions per game, 71%, excuse me. And yeah, I mean, he proved to be another crucial element of Real Madrid going through in the Champions League. This is also this match against Chelsea and the match against Cadiz was the first time since October that he has assisted in back-to-back games, which proves that he is slowly getting back to his peak when the team actually needs him, because this round against Manchester City is gonna be a tough one, a fun one for all of us watching it. But yeah, it's gonna be huge.
Yeah, well, I think that leads us nicely into the next one. But on Rodrigo, I think the stat was that he's now scored as many goals in the Champions League with 15 as he has in all Spanish competitions combined. But that is taking into account that in Spanish competitions, it's 114 games, and in the Champions League, it's 37. I mean, that is
And no disrespect, but yes. But when you play in La Liga, you all tend to play against team that should be at least not on your level. Like, I don't mean to disrespect any team, but
that's
the
very
Champions
harsh.
League.
I think Chelsea and Elche would have a really tight game if they played each other.
No, but I mean, in the Champions League, you're supposing facing the top teams in Europe. And I'm thinking about Liverpool,
teams,
I'm thinking about Chelsea. Yes.
Exactly. It's a bizarre record. But, I mean, next up, of course, is a team that he scored two goals against last season as well in the semi-finals, Manchester City.
In a minute.
There was one bad thing, Jorge, for Real Madrid fans. I'm sorry to bring you down. But Eder Militao was shown a yellow card. I saw some Madridistas complaining, saying, Carlo, why was Militao even on the pitch, knowing that he was a yellow card away from suspension? And he's now unavailable for that first leg. Also, David Alaba picked up an injury. He's going to be out for a week or two. Should be back in time for that game. But if there's any hiccup in his recovery there, I mean, that's a problem for Real Madrid, right?
Yes, that's a problem when you're facing a top team in the Champions League. And that's a big problem when you're facing Manchester City and Erling Haaland at the level he is right now. That is going to be a huge point of the round to see who can try to slow Erling Haaland. Could this be Nacho's final coronation as the starting centre-back for Real Madrid? Let's see. But to be honest, without Militao, without Alaba, Rudiger with some inconsistent performances in these past few games, that's going to be like a huge factor in determining the first finalist of the Champions League.
Cool then, Jorge. Last question, I'm going to put you on the spot. Real Madrid, Manchester City, who is in the Champions League final in Istanbul against one of the teams from Milan?
Well, I have to start saying that Real Madrid went through last season by just a snitch of luck, to be honest, because they scored two goals in a minute against the Manchester City that I consider to be worse than the Manchester City that we are seeing right now. City has now Erling Haaland, and I believe that he's going to be the determining factor in this round. So I see Manchester City going through to the final.
Wow. At the start there, I thought, is that Jorge climbing up a fence to get him to go and sit on top? But no, he jumped right up and Manchester
no,
City.
No.
Yes. I am surprised, but that's very Real Madrid, isn't it? To say, no, we're not the favourites in a Champions League semi-final.
But it's true. And if I have to confess, and I'm going to do it right now, my heart is with AC Milan. I want to see AC Milan winning back the Champions League.
Okay, we'll talk in a few weeks when the final is AC Milan against Real Madrid, and we'll see if he's going to say because I don't believe. Fantastic. Well, thank you very much for joining us, Jorge.
Thank you, Sam.
And then stay tuned. We'll be back in part two, where Matt Clark will be joining us to take a look at all the action across La Liga.
Thank you.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hello and welcome back to part two of La Liga Lowdown. And I am now joined by Statman Matt Clark. Hello, Matt. How are you doing?
Not bad, thank you, Sam. Yeah, it's good to be on for a midweek pod. The other side of the mic, so to speak. Looks like an intriguing weekend ahead. And as we get into that point in the season, every game seems to matter that little bit more. So lots to play for.
Yeah, for those of you listening, don't worry. We do let Matt out sometimes. He is allowed to do something other than watch La Liga, create Excels with incredible numbers and so on. But right now we've got him here. So Matt, come on. A big weekend of football at both ends of the table, really. I mean, before we run through all of the fixtures, I think there's only one game to start with, and that's going to be the headline. Sunday afternoon, 4:15 kickoff local time. At the Spotify Camp Nou as Barcelona take on Atletico. What are your thoughts on that one? Have you got a prediction? I mean, Barcelona could go 4 without a win if they don't beat Atletico. And Atletico, of course, haven't lost since they played Barcelona on January the 8th in La Liga. So it's going to be a tasty one.
Indeed. I mean, they could go 4 without a goal because they've been on this, you know, very bad drought of goal scoring and struggling to score goals, as we say, 3 in a row for the first time since 2008, without scoring in all competitions. And it's definitely a problem now. And we know they have this massive lead in La Liga, but at the same time, if they keep dropping points, it just gives Madrid that little bit of incentive to say, hang on, we could still maybe do something in La Liga. I know Tom and me spoke on the match day recap last about the possibility of, you know, High Liga, maybe. At the moment, probably still say no, but if Atletico Madrid were to go to the Camp Nou and win, as you say, they're in fine form, unbeaten in, what, 13 in La Liga, as you say, since that Barca game.
Are you saying that you believe in La Liga de Lixon?
Well, I don't know, but I think there's a chance that Atletico Madrid are in such good form that they could go there. And if they score first, we know that Atletico can defend a lead when they're at their best. They can defend a lead, and Barca, the frustration could become too much again, and they'll still be missing absentees. They were encouraged this week to see Griezmann. We'll talk about him in a second, but Pedri and Dembélé back in training. That's a big boost for Barca, but at the same time, they're not going to be match fit or ready for this game, so they're still going to be relying on the likes of Ferran and Rafinha, and obviously Lewandowski is. His form since the World Cup is alarming. So, yeah, Barca need to get a win to get their confidence back, if nothing else. But it'll be very tough.
So everybody heard it here first. Atletico Madrid are going to win the league, courtesy of Matt Flurry. But no, I think that's a very solid point. And yeah, I mean, on paper, I think we could actually see a very strong Barcelona lineup if with De Jong, with Pedri supposedly in contention. But I mean, I don't think that necessarily takes into account the fact that they're not going to be match fit. That they do have some big players like Robert Lewandowski who are really, really out of form. And I think looking at this, I mean, one of the things that really surprised me the other day, I was looking at the XG for specific players and so on. And it's not just that Lewandowski, I mean, it's kind of like that golden line, isn't it, as well? Like, you know, if you're getting in the right chances, the goals will come. But Lewandowski isn't really even getting that too much. I mean, he's got 7.26 XG from his last 11 games, which is only second to Karim Benzema, sorry. But I mean, he just hasn't been in good form at all. I think he is currently, if I am not mistaken, second in La Liga, I think it was, for XG underperformance since the World Cup. The only player who's underperformed by more is Rodrigo, who, of course, in the Champions League is unstoppable and in La Liga is very stoppable. but yeah, I mean, when we look at what really matters, which is the number of goals, it's only 4 goals in 11 games. I mean, that's less than Oihan Sunset, it's less than Borja Mayoral, it's less than Alvaro Morata, it's less than Kyle Larin. I mean, who would have expected Kyle Larin to be outscoring Robert Lewandowski in this calendar year of La Liga? I don't think there'd be too many people, right?
Well, absolutely. That's staggering, isn't it, really? And it's true, because Lewandowski, since the World Cup, he's been Pichichi. He was streets clear, and now, you know, obviously he might not win it if Benzema scores a few more, or if the likes of Enzinal, Hossolu, etc. But yeah, it's hard to put your finger on it, because he's still in those positions, and he's still, I think it's just a kind of team system thing, because they haven't got the same kind of joy from the wide areas that, of course, Dembele was providing with those assists. I think that's a key part of it, of why Lewandowski is struggling so much. But again, I think at this stage, it comes down to a confidence issue. And when the whole team is struggling to score, the burden on Lewandowski becomes bigger by essence. So I think it's almost just becoming a snowball effect now. So they'll need one to go in, basically one off his bum or anything. That'll just get him back in the goal scoring, and probably then he'll kick on and get a hat trick. So it's one of those things that, it will just take probably one golden chance and puts it away and he's back. But for now, it is an issue. And as we say, contrast it with Antoine Griezmann, who is probably the best player in La Liga in 2023, if not the season. He's in his best ever form, you could argue, back to Camp Nou, where he obviously was and didn't quite work out for him. And the context of the negotiations with Barca, he could only play 30 minutes a week, and then they managed to negotiate a good price. And imagine if he were to go there and then put in a performance and maybe score a winning goal to put another dent in Barca's seemingly at one stage unstoppable force of home form. It would be quite something.
It would be quite something. I mean, you mentioned snowball effects, and Atletico have been a little bit like that. One thing that they could face, though, is that they might be without Marcos Llorente. He picked up his 5th yellow card of the season against Almeria. If you ask me, it was never a yellow card, but according to the referees, it was. The Atletico appealed it, and the appeal was turned down. So I think the latest that I saw just on Thursday evening was that they were considering taking it to the Court of Appeals for Sport to try and get it at least suspended for this game at the weekend. But
those guys are busy, aren't they? Everyone goes there.
Everyone goes there for anything these days. I feel like it's just it's a good idea to get sent off the week before a big game, because at least you know you can appeal it and get it suspended. But La Liga things. But I mean, Marcos Llorente is a huge miss for Atletico. I think he's been one of their best players since the turn of the year, alongside Antoine Griezmann. And that's going to be some task to do that. I mean, Rodrigo De Paul could switch over to the right. I think Thomas Lemar is going to come in on the left of the Atletico midfield. But a big ask. But Matt, let's move on, because Barça Atleti is for the glory hunters, the guys who watch La Liga casually. And I know that there's another game which you have both sets of eyes on. both sets of eyes. That's not really a thing, is it? But you have all of your attention focused on, and that is going to be one for the real La Liga nerds and geeks. And that is Espanyol Cadiz on Friday night.
Yeah, I think this is a proper relegation six-pointer. And Espanyol are in the worst form of any side in the league. What's that, six defeats in a row? No side has lost six in a row this season, not even Elche. That's how bad it is for Espanyol. They've made the change of manager. It was kind of expected that Diego Martinez would be dispensed with. But poor Luis García, he's had no discernible managerial bounce just yet. And they'll need to find something soon because they're basically in exactly the same spot as Valencia, locked on 27 points. Three off safety now, which is marked by Almeria. But they're 4 points behind Cádiz. So, of course, if they were to beat Cádiz at the RCD on Friday, that's a massive step to kind of drag Cádiz back into the fight. But were Cádiz to win, and then they themselves have been in decent form recently. If Cádiz were to win, that would be then 7 points gap between Cádiz and Espanyol, which would, again, at this stage, start to look like a bit of a chasm. And you're starting to see teams pull away. We've seen Sevilla pick up some form lately. Real Valladolid have had a bit of a bounce. Getafe are fairly solid. Cadiz solid. So it looked like a kind of whole bottom half battle for relegation. Now you almost drag it down to three or four teams maybe for the final two spots. So this is a huge game for Espanyol in particular.
No, of course. And I mean, another big game that we'll get onto in a second is Valencia versus Elche. But if we look at this as kind of that section of the table, basically from 14th below Sevilla down to Espanyol. If Sevilla beat Cadiz this weekend, they'd be on 30 points. If Almeria lose to Athletic, they'd be on 30 points. If Valencia beat Elche, they'd be on 30 points. Then we'd have Cadiz on 31, Getafe on 31, Real Valladolid on 32. I mean, that's five teams separated by 2 points with only 8 games to go. I mean, the pressure really is on for these teams now.
It is. It absolutely is. And we've seen pretty much all of those teams, maybe apart from Almeria and, well, three of them haven't, but quite a few teams have made changes this season in managerial dugouts. Some of them multiple times. I'm talking Sevilla, Elche. Some better than others, of course. But it really is kind of stick or twist time because I think Valencia will obviously stick with Baraja now. But this is an absolute must win. They have to beat Elche away from home. There's no excuses now. They have to pick up 3 points. And then they have a home game against Valladolid in midweek, which is another big one. So if they can get some positive results in those, maybe 4 points out of six, suddenly looks a little bit rosier. But at the moment, it's, well, we've seen the stories come out and, you know, the whole kind of football world is now attuned to the situation at Mestalla. And it's pretty perilous. So, yeah, nothing other than 3 points at Elche will be sufficient for Valencia this weekend.
Let's wrap it up there. Just before we go, what is one thing that you're looking out for this weekend?
I am quite curious to see how Real Valladolid get on against Girona because they've taken 4 points from 2 games under Paolo Pezzolano and they've scored 5 goals. So they found their scoring touch, which they were lacking under Pacheta in the final weeks of his tenure. And this was actually a surprising managerial change. I don't think many of us saw Pacheta's departure coming. But they made the change, they went for it. And so far, so good. It's only 2 games. But this is another kind of key marker to see how they get on against Girona, who everyone expected to be in the relegation fight, but are actually overperforming and are kind of safely mid-table. Michel has done a fantastic job there. And they're pretty free scoring as well. So this could be a kind of low-key goal fest. So, yeah, watch out for that one.
Yeah, I think my pick of the weekend on paper is Real Sociedad Rayo Vallecano. I think that's two teams who play great football. Real kind of warrior players, a lot of them younger, some of the experienced veterans and so on. I love that game. Definitely going to tune into that one. But the one that I'm really excited for as a La Liga purist is Mallorca versus Getafe. Because I feel like I could gamble everything I own on that being a 0-0 draw. And I don't think I'd even like lose any sleep. I wouldn't sweat. You just almost can guarantee it's going to be a terrible game of football for the purists. If you are into your tiki-taka and a very big fan of Pep Guardiola, maybe don't tune into that one on Sunday evening. But Javier Aguirre against Kike Sanchez Flores is going to be a cracking game. So just wait and watch that one end up being 4-3 or something like that now. So that...
Enzanel hat-trick, Vedat Morici double. It's going to happen.
It will inevitably happen now, but we will wait and see. So thank you very much for listening. Thank you very much, Matt, for joining us for this second part of the podcast.
My pleasure. Thank you, Sam.
And make sure to stay tuned to us throughout the week as well, because well, the weekend, because then we have another midweek match day coming up early in next week as well. So it's going to be non-stop football. I was just looking, I think Monday is the only day without any action. And then we have action right the way through until, I think it's the 5th of May, is it, that we don't have any? Well, we don't have the fixtures for that weekend yet, do we? So the 5th of May is the next day where we might not have any football in Spain. So make sure to stay tuned. We've got plenty of action on our Substack and on our Twitter. We've also got a Q&A with Ben Hayward, the Spanish football expert, which you can read up there with your questions featured. So yeah, thank you for listening. Make sure to tune into Mallorca Getafe on Sunday night. And thank you for joining us.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.